Okay, very excited to begin a new series, a new year of attempting to connect ourselves to various personalities, thinkers, tzaddikim from this generation and past. Mostly, we'll be focusing on people who are no longer in the world. In terms of tzaddikim who are in the world, and great intellectual personalities who are alive. So, if you're interested in someone you can go visit to speak to in person who's alive today, you can do that, Baruch Hashem, on your own. There's a little bit of confusion about what exactly this shir is, because somebody put on the wall, on the schedule, that it's called the World of Achronim. I don't know who made that up, but I'm not sure where they got that from. So, if I were to want to give a title to this particular shir, or this particular series, I would probably call it Revolutionaries. The World of Achronim sounds like we're probably going to be studying famous Ketzoses or Achiezers, or famous Chakiras of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. When in reality, what we're going to be doing is it's going to be a series of mini-series on several different important Jewish personalities who really revolutionized the way that we look at the world, specifically through the eyes of our Judaism. And so we'll spend a few weeks studying some of the core ideas of Rav Soloveitchik, some of the core ideas of Rav Kook, some of the core ideas of Rav Yitzchak Huttner, some of the core ideas of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and we'll try to enter into their world, put on their glasses, and to try to see the world in a little bit of a different way. But I thought that before we actually began our journey, I believe next week we're going to start with Rav Soloveitchik. By a show of hands, anybody here ever read, let's say, either Halachic Man or Lonely Man of Faith? You want to read either of those two books? Which? Same, okay. So Halachic Man is a very difficult work. We're going to try to at least do the first few chapters of that together over the next few weeks to try to give you a grounding in what Rav Soloveitchik is trying to bring to light in that sefer. But as a bit of an introduction this week, so I thought that we would try to analyze why it is that this is even an important endeavor. Why should there be a class in Oraita, or anywhere for that matter, in trying to get into the mind and heart of great Jewish leaders, of revolutionaries, people who revolutionized Jewish thought? Why is that an important endeavor? So there was a very important Rosh Hashiva of the previous generation. His name was Shlomo Freifeld. And he started the Yeshiva Shar Yashiv. Anyone here ever heard of Shar Yashiv? Shar Yashiv started as a yeshiva that was open to all types of Jews. The only qualification was that you were seeking. And Rav Freifeld was wont to accept many interesting students, some of them with long hair, some of them with piercings, some of them with black hats. It was a very eclectic place to go to yeshiva. And Freifeld had a certain warmth about him that attracted people from the gamut of Judaism. And in his biography, there's a story that somebody once came through a Freifeld sukkah. A little bit, it'll be sukkahs. And a few of his students, somebody came in particular, but it was a few students really together, who came to his sukkah, and they noticed that on the wall of his sukkah he had pictures of different gedolim, different personalities who he felt connected to. And somebody asked him, they said, you know, who is that, like your grandfather? Like who are these like old men, you know, that are kind of plastered all over the walls of your sukkah? Like who are these people? So Rav Freifeld turned around from his seat and he looked and he saw the pictures of all of these Gedolei Yisrael. And he kind of looked back at him and he said, "Oh, those?" He said, "Those are very rare pictures of a species that was nearly made to be extinct around the time of the Second World War. They're called human beings." That's what he said. He said, those are called human beings. And what Rav Freifeld was saying in his funny way is that he was saying that when we study the worldview of these people, we are attempting to become more refined, more sincere, more ethical, more holy human beings. And when we want to become this thing called the human beings, we have to look to those who excelled at becoming human beings. But it's a step more than that. The Gemara says in Sota, Yeshiva was studying Sota at night, the Gemara says in Sota, Tana d'Rabbi Yishmael, was on that particular day that, you all recall, Yosef HaTzadik had a particular incident, a run-in with Eshes Potiphar. And the Gemara says it was on that day. The Gemara describes how that day was a certain chag. V'holchu kulam lebeis avodas kochavim, and everybody went to shul, so to speak, for their idols. V'hi Amra and Eshes Potiphar said, you know, chola ani. She said, I'm not feeling so great. You know, I'm going to stay home, knowing full well that Yosef would be there and she'd be able to attempt to seduce him once again. And she said, Ein li yom shenizkak li Yosef ki yom hazeh. There's no day that I'm going to succeed attempting Yosef like this day. This day when everybody's out of the house, it'll be easy. And the Gemara says that at the moment that Yosef was about to give in, that moment that he was about to sin, the diukno shel aviv. What does that mean, diukno shel aviv? The image of his father came to him, and appeared to him in the window. What does it mean that the image of his father appeared to him in the window? So the Mefarshim point out the most beautiful thing, because everybody knows that in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, the Torah tells us of the birth of Yosef. And Rashi writes that Yosef looked startlingly like Yaakov. They looked very similar. And what that means is that when Yosef looked to the window and he saw a reflection of himself, he wasn't just seeing himself. But when he saw himself, he saw himself and said, "Hold on a second, I look a lot like my father." And that brought up all of these images, all of these experiences of his father. You know, Rav Soloveitchik, who Mirza Shem, we're going to start next week studying some of the thought of Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik oftentimes begins his talks with something to the effect of, "I'd like to share with you some of my experiences from my Judaism." That's how he always talks about my experiences. Right? Because if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then an experience is worth 1,000 pictures. And Yosef is seeing this picture of his father, and he's imagining himself in his father, and he starts to experience all of these emotions of growing up in Yaakov's house. And through that, he's able to save himself from the temptation of Eshes Potiphar. And what that means is that a person who's able to see himself in a reflection, maybe not physically, maybe we won't ever look like Rav Soloveitchik, or we'll never look like Rav Huttner, or we'll never look like Rav Kook. But if we could begin to experience experiences that they had through their Torah, through learning a little bit about who they were, it'll help us to navigate the difficulties of living a modern life. And ultimately, if, as Rav Freifeld taught us, that we're trying to look at these people who are the models of what it means to be a human being, so that must remind us of a different Gemara, the Gemara in Shabbos. Listen carefully. The Gemara in Shabbos says, "Amar Rav Zira, Amar Rava Bar Zimuna, Im Rishonu B'nei Malachim, Anu B'nei Anashim." If we look at the earlier generations like angels, then we have a chance of becoming humans. And if we look at the earlier generations like they're mere humans, just like us, so then we have less of a chance of becoming human. We shoot low, we end up becoming like, the Gemara says, like donkeys. And not just like any donkeys, not even like the donkeys of the great tzaddikim of the past, they become like simple donkeys. That's what the Gemara says. What does that mean? So, anyone here ever read the book Man's Search for Meaning? Viktor Frankl? Some of the Shanabek guys?
Gotta read it.
It's a very important book to read. So there's actually very rare footage. It's one of the only videos, I think, that exists, at least open to the public, of Viktor Frankl. Very rare footage of him teaching in a college. If I'm not mistaken, I believe it's UCLA. And there's this amazing clip of Viktor Frankl. It's black and white, kind of grainy. He's talking to a group of college students. It's also pretty cool because he's kind of like standing on the middle of the stage, and there's just, you could tell, like, you know, it's the 60s and the 70s. There's just like people sitting all over the floor and sitting on the stage. It's not like, you know, rigid. And he's talking to them and he says, I want to tell you that I, a 70-year-old man, started taking flying lessons. He said, I want to tell you the first thing that my pilot instructor taught me. He taught me that when a person is practicing to be a pilot, so you have to know something called crabbing. Crabbing, like a crab. It's called crabbing. What's crabbing? So crabbing is, if I'm over here, it's my plane, I'm flying, and I have a target right over here. Okay. So if I aim my plane directly at that target, there's no way I'm going to hit it. Why? Because there's something called crosswinds, right? The crosswinds are going to push me up, they're going to push me down, they're going to push me to the right, they're going to push me to the left. So a pilot has to learn the art of crabbing. What's crabbing? Crabbing means I aim up over here, knowing that there's a pressure from the crosswinds pushing me down. And if I do a little bit of simple math, a little bit of a calculation, I can understand that if the crosswind is blowing at X number of knots per mile, and I'm aiming X number of miles away, so then I have to, in order to hit my target over here, I have to aim above it so that the wind will knock me down and I'll hit my target. So then he turns to the people who are listening, and Viktor Frankl says, the same thing is true of human beings. If a human being sets his sight over here, he's going to fall over here. If a person sets their goal over here, they're going to fall over here. It's human nature. A person is never going to hit the target. Because we set big, big goals for ourselves. Originally, it was the first day of school, right? You have your big notebooks. You have your sharpened pencils. And you start to take notes. And already you missed like, I don't know, one line of something. And you're like, ah, I got to catch that up. Okay, I'm going to catch it during. By the third or fourth day already, things start to unravel. And you don't hit your mark. But if a person aims high, so then you have a chance, through crabbing, of at least hitting your target. So without really knowing it, Viktor Frankl was teaching us why it's important to study the lives of great people. Because if we study the lives of great people, and like the Gemara in Shabbos says, we look at them like malachim, we say that's not really attainable, but if I set that as my goal, then at least I have a chance of being a human being. Then at least I have a chance of twinning my mind to the mind of some of the greatest thinkers that ever walked the face of the earth. So that's reason one why I think it might be important to study this particular sugya of what it means to be a great person. Now again, we're not going to be studying every week what it means to be a great person. That's not the question. We're going to be studying different ideas, different themes in the thought of great people. But through osmosis, my tefillah is, since this is a hakdama share, so it's really all a tefillah of what we're trying to do, and I hope that through studying the lives of these great people, through osmosis, we'll be able to become great ourselves and set our heights at maybe a little bit higher mark than we would have otherwise. So that's number one. Number two. And Shlomo Melech was described as the wisest of all men. Shlomo Melech is the wisest person to ever live. And Shlomo Melech said, in source number three, Pasuk in Mishlei, listen well to this pasuk. This is very, very strong. I'm going to share with you two different ways of understanding this pasuk, and then a third way, which is nogeya to what we're doing here, which is very much related to this concept of studying the ways of tzaddikim. So Shlomo Melech said, "Matzreif lekesef, ukur lezahav, v'ish lefi mahalala." Matzreif l'kesef, v'kor l'zahav, v'ish l'fi mahalala. Let's understand what that means on a simple level. We'll see it a little bit of a deeper level, and then we'll try to understand what it means for us here in terms of this particular series that we're trying to start here. So what does it mean on a simple level? What do the words actually mean? Matzrif l'kesef, v'kor l'zahav, v'ish l'fi mahalala. Literally it means a furnace for silver and a melting pot for gold, and the person according to his praises. So take a look at Rashi. Well, what does that have to do with anything? Shlomo is supposed to be the wisest of all men. What has that teaching me anything? Okay, a melting pot for gold, a furnace for silver, a man according to his praises. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Matzrif. Kli asoy letzarif kesef, v'akor asoy levchon zahav. See, these two things, a matzrif and a kor, apparently, are some sort of pots that were used. You take a piece of gold, you take a piece of silver. Now, it's highly possible that mixed into that silver and that gold, there might be some iron, there might be some other minerals, maybe there'll be some copper. So if I want to know how much this gold is worth, how much this silver is worth, it's probably important to figure out how much of this is actually gold. I'm going to sell it for its weight in gold, but if it includes iron and copper, etc. So then the first thing I need to do is I need to melt it down and break it down into its most basic parts so I can say what's gold, what's silver, what's copper, what's iron, what's... So Shlomo Melech is teaching us that if I want to know the value of gold, I put it in a matzrif, in a kor. If I want to know the value of silver, I put it in a matzrif. If I want to know the value of a human being, l'fi mahalala. I have to look at how people praise him. That's how Rashi explains it. Ish l'fi mahalala. I want to know, is this person an important person? So I have to see, what do people say about this guy? Right? Each one of you, when you applied to a particular summer camp, or you applied to a raita, so... probably you had to submit references because people are like, what do you say about this guy? He's a good guy. He's dangerous. He's healthy. He's balanced. Level-headed. What do people say about this person? And just like if I want to know the value of gold, I want to know the value of silver, I need to put it in a kor, I need to put it in a matzrif. So a person, I want to know his value, I have to put it through the test of seeing what do people say about it. Okay. That's Rashi, that's the simple pshat. And the Malbim comes along and the Malbim says a little deeper, listen. The Malbim says, take a look in source number 5. Matzrif lekesef ekor lezov yish lefi mahalo, hakesef tzurufim b'mitzarif, v'azov shehu yakar min hakesef, v'tov mimenu, tzarech kor letzarfo. Ah, so the Malbim says, actually when you think about it, these two vehicles for checking gold and silver, actually, one is better than the next. A matzrif is good for checking the true value of something. You can melt it down into its basic parts. But a kor, which is a different type of melting pot, these are two different types of ways of melting down the gold or the silver, is actually better at the job. So the Malbim says, okay, I see what's going on here. There's a pattern. If I want to know the value of kesef, I want to know the value of silver, so I put it in a matzrif. And a matzrif will tell me more or less what the value is. But if I'm dealing in gold, which every ounce is so much more expensive, is so much more precious, so you don't use a matzrif. You don't use a matzrif to tell the value of gold. You want to use a kor. A kor is much better at telling the exact value of something. Following? So everything in accordance with how important it is, that's how much we want to check that thing with a better device. V'ish l'fi mahalo. So it says the Malbim, a beautiful teaching. Listen to this. Both of these are kind of parenthetical, but couldn't not share them. The Malbim says that just as we check more carefully gold, rather than silver. We check gold in accordance with the weight of gold. Gold is very chashuv. So we look deeply into it. We want to make sure that everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. If it's off by the slightest bit, it could be the difference between hundreds of dollars. Silver, not as much. V'ish l'fi mahalalo. It says the Malbim, be careful. Because you have to understand that the more you are praised, the more people are going to check you out to make sure that it's really real. Meaning if you're praised like silver, so then people will say, okay, he seems to be a good guy. Like, what's the difference if he's, you know, this level of being good or this level of being good? It's just silver. But the more that somebody praises you, the more people want to check you out to make sure that it's legit, to make sure that it's real. So whereas Rashi was saying advice about how can you tell the value of somebody, he's talking to me when I want to know the value of someone else. Rashi says, go ask his friends, go ask his teachers, go ask his parents what they say about him. The Malbim says, no. This is advice to each individual person. The Malbim says, ish l'fi mahalo, realize that the more that you are praised, meaning the more that you are out in the open and people are talking about you, and the bigger your shir is, and the more famous you are, realize that people are going to expect more of you. So it's advice to the person along the lines of what the Gemara says, ein ha-bracha samoy, ein ha-bracha shore ela mash samoy min ha-ayin. Blessing does not dwell upon something unless it is hidden from the eyes. It's not so good to be out in the open and be praised all the time, because then people are going to start judging you and saying, does he really deserve this praise? Is he really the person that they're claiming that he is? Best to keep quiet, says the Malbim. Oh, but here's the third level. And this brings us back to why we're studying the Masters. This is the teaching of Rabbeinu Yonah. If you never heard this Rabbeinu Yonah before, you're in for a treat. Rabbeinu Yonah shares a very deep insight into this pasuk. See, Rashi taught us that if you want to know the value of silver, so you check a matzri. If you want to know the value of gold, you check a kor. The ish l'fi mahalalo. And a person, according to his praises, we explained, Rashi taught us, that if I want to know something about Kori, so then I go and ask, what do people say about him? He's a good guy, he's not such a nice guy. Okay. If I want to know something about, if you want to know something about me, so you go see what people say. It's an interesting share, it's a boring share. He talks too softly. What do people say about him? And then you'll know whether you want to go to the share or not. So the Malbim says something amazing. The Malbim says, Ish l'fi mahalo is not talking about what do people say about him. But take a look inside. This is from the Shari Tshuva. Rabbeinu Yonah actually says this in two different places. Rabbeinu Yonah explains as follows. Unbelievable. He totally flipped the pasuk around. Rabbeinu Yonah says, you want to know really what Weinreich is all about? You don't have to ask anybody. The only thing you have to do is watch him. You know, you want to know what David is all about? You don't have to ask anyone. All you have to do is watch. If it's a younger person, and they're in yeshiva, or they have a dorm, it's not as private, but even if they are married and have their own house, all you have to do is go into the person's house, or go into their room. I could walk into any of your rooms, and within 5 minutes, I could tell you a little bit about who you are. Why? Because ish l'fi mahalalo doesn't mean a person according to what other people say about him. Who cares what other people say about him? Maybe they totally misunderstood him. You want a real test of who a person is? Rabbeinu Yonah says the real test of who a person is ish l'fi mahalalo. A person according to his praises. In other words, who does he praise? Not what do people say about him, but what does he say about others? Not other people, not like does he speak Lashon Hara. But if you walk into Adam Levy's room, you're going to find pictures of rabbis on the wall. I don't know if that's true, but I assume. If you walk into the 8th grade room of David Weinberg, before he was called David Weinberg, you might find pictures, I don't know, I'm not going to say anybody's name, I don't know, Kurt Cobain maybe? So, you walk into my house now, you'll see different pictures. Next to Kurt Cobain. No, I'm just kidding. you'll see different pictures. What does that mean? What happened? What changed? How come when I was in eighth grade, I had a picture of Dave Grohl on my wall, and now I'm in, like 20th grade, and I don't have that picture anymore. Now I have a picture of the Rogachev Ergon on my wall. So what happened? I became a loser or something? What happened? So who I praise tells you about what I think is most important. Simple as that. If you walk into the lunchroom and during lunch you hear people talking about Abaye and Rava, you hear people talking about Rav Soloveitchik or Ari Kaplan, so you know something about that person. That's how they spend their time talking about and praising and thinking about great people. You hear somebody, you walk into the lunchroom, you hear somebody talking about their father or their mother. That tells you something about that person. You walk into the lunchroom, you hear somebody talking about, I grew up in Lower Merion, so you hear somebody talking about Kobe Bryant. That tells you something about the person. You hear somebody talking about Ralph Waldo Emerson and how much they love their brother. That tells you something about the person. Ish lefi mahalo doesn't mean a person according to what people praise him for, but it means what is he interested in? What does this person spend time thinking about, talking about, having pictures on their wall of? Ish lefi mahalo. So therefore, if we're spending time once a week to come together, now we're spending more than once a week studying the words of holy people, but if we're spending an hour a week, max, 45 minutes a week, attempting to purposefully stop and reflect upon the lives of great people, that says something about who we are. Rav Schwab, Rav Shimon Schwab. Shimon Schwab he was more than that also, but at the end of his life, he was a pulpit rabbi for many years in the Washington Heights area. And he has a very famous book on tefillah, Rav Schwab on prayer, it's called in English, Iyun Tefillah in Hebrew. He has a sefer on Chumash called Ma'ayan Beis HaShoeva. He was a remarkable thinker who probably most associated himself with the worldview of Rav Hirsch, Rav Shmuel Hirsch. Saw himself as kind of the next step of Rav Shmuel Hirsch in America. And Rav Schwab once walked past a Jew who was sitting with a newspaper. So this Jew was perusing a newspaper, and he said, "What's going on? What's new in the world? What's going on in the world?" The guy looked up at him and said, "Not too much. Not so much." And Schwab was like kind of looking over his shoulder at the newspaper while he was... And as he was looking, Rav Schwab saw that Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, I don't know if you've never heard of him, but had passed away. Schwab looked at him and said, "What planet are you living on? What planet do you live on that like Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, who was one of the Gedolei Olam at the time, died? And like, what's going on? Not so much. Like, I don't know. There were no major games. There was no like, I don't know. Apple didn't come out with like the next, you know. So there's nothing. Not too much is going on. Chaim Ozer died. What planet do you live on?" So he said. The Rav of the Shul where I used to daven before I moved to Eretz Yisrael. It's a great move. I moved to Eretz Yisrael. He said that somebody once in his community, not in his shul, but in his community, this is pretty wild, listen to this, someone from our community where we had a baby girl, and so the Rav of this shul, Moshe Weinberger, so he asked, and said, "Oh, the mother's doing okay, the baby's doing okay, yeah, Baruch Hashem. Oh, did they name the baby yet?" We said, "Yeah, they named the baby. They named the baby Michaela Yardena. Mamash, beautiful. They named after the grandmother or something? No. Michael Jordan. Michaela Yardena. Named after Michael Jordan." So he said, "Are you serious?" He said, "Yeah, Michaela Michael Yardena. After Michael Jordan." He said he asked three times. The person said the third time. He said he went up into his office and he started crying. This person. Mamash started crying. He didn't laugh. He started crying, this person. A person names their child Michael Yardena. Michael Jordan's a fine person. I think. I haven't read the newspaper in a long time. I assume that he's a very fine person. He probably gives a lot of money to charity. He's probably a good father. Michaeli Ardena, that's like our hopes for our daughters and sons. Michaeli Ardena. So you see a lot about a person when you see what does a person praise, what is a person interested in, what is a person thinking about. So listen to this. This is from the Chazon Ish. A few more minutes together. This is from the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish said in one of his letters, this is in source number, I'm sorry I didn't number the letters, I'll try to do that in the future shame. This is source number 7. It's from the Hakdama to the Sefer Maisa Ish. Maisa Ish is a 7-volume set of halachos and minhagim and stories and about the Chazon Ish. Rav Yaakov Meir Shechter, who has a yeshiva not too far away from here, so an elder man, he has a kolel where they study Gemara all morning, they study Kabbalah after. He said that this generation connects very deeply to stories about the Chazon Ish and to the Chazon Ish. That's what he said.
I don't know, maybe it'll connect to me.
But listen to this. This is from the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish wrote in one of his letters. Ro'i l'machzikim b'toras Hashem l'das eskidoleha ba'ofen ha'amiti. It's good. It's fitting for those who wish to strengthen themselves in Torah and Yirah Shemayim to know Gedolei Yisrael in a true way. Well, not necessarily to have a yes. Like I said, those who are living, it's very good to try to. Full disclosure, I'm very, very scared of Gedolah. I always get very. I find it easier to learn their svarim than to talk to them. But I try to force myself to go speak to people who I think are good. Even Rav Yair, every day I try to force myself to go speak to Rav Yair. Where's it go? Go speak to Rav Yair. Go speak to Binny. Speak to Rav Dovid. Speak to any Rav Blau, Rav Dardik, Sarstein. These people are Gedolim. So I'm usually very timid. I'm very afraid to go talk to Gedolim. But you have to force yourself. These people are available. Go be a little bit of a nudge. But it's important to know Gedolim ba'ofen ha'amiti. Ki ha'idea shel chachmei hador liba umidasam. Because knowing the way that these people think, the way that they act, the way they present themselves. Hein hein gufei Torah. This itself is Torah. And you can sit down to learn. And Baruch Hashem, in this particular shir, we're going to be able every week to do both. We're going to meet these people, even though they're no longer in the world, and we're going to study their Torah. But a person who goes and understands the ways and takes a walk with and takes a car ride with, a person who is saturated in Torah, that itself is gufei Torah. That itself is coming into contact with the Torah, right? What does the Gemara in Makos say? How foolish are people who stand up for a Sefer Torah, but they don't stand up for a Talmud Chacham who knows the Torah. Being around these people is able to change a person. And then listen to this. This is great. He says, Toldos Chayehem Shel Gedolei Yisrael, knowing the biographies and the stories about great leaders of the Jewish people, Heim Sifrei Musar Atovim B'Yoseh. These are the greatest books of Musar. Right, what's the greatest, you know, in all these self-help books, and all these, I don't ever read the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, or Happier. Happier? You have Happier?
So much happier.
No Happier?
I have.
No, do you know the book Happier?
Oh, no.
Oh, Tal Ben Shachar?
No,
Tal Ben Shachar's book Happier. Or The Road Less Traveled by M. Scott Peck. Or all these books, whatever. All these books. What's the best part of this book? The stories about these businessmen who, you know. So if a person wants to learn how to become a businessman, so you read these books about, Tipping Point and Blink and all these other books. And you'll see stories and you'll begin to acculturate yourself to the world of the businessmen and how they think and how they market and how they... And a person wants to acculturate himself to the world of Jewish thought. So the way to do that is to understand who are the people who are giving birth to this way of thinking. Famous passage from the Rambam. Bear with me because we're really almost done. Famous passage from the Rambam. The Rambam writes that there are 5 types of speech. The Rambam in Pirkei Avos. In Pirkei Avos, the Rambam writes that there are 5 types of speech. Ani Omer Shehadibor Yachlik with the Chiyuv HaTorah L'Chamisha Chalakim, the concept of speech, the human ability to speak, which is uniquely human, is split into five different categories, or five types of speech. What are they? So if you want to see this Rambam inside, it's on the bottom of the first side of the page. Aleph, Mitzuvabo. The first kind of speech is one that you are commanded to. For example, benching, Shema, learning. The second kind, Nizhar Mimenu, is speech that you are proscribed from speaking. Right? Profanity, Lashon Hara. Gimel, Nim'as. The third kind is it's not even that it's proscribed, it's that it's disgusting. Mos. The fourth kind, which is the kind I want to focus on right now, is ahuv, beloved speech. Even though it's not commanded, it's beloved. And the fifth kind is mutter. I don't know, talking to somebody, shoot the breeze, not really talking about anything particular, right? Can you pass the soda? That's mutter speech, right? So the Rambam says, listen to this. We're almost done there. The Rambam says, ha-chelek ha-revi, the fourth chelek, hu hane'ahav. The fourth type of speech which is beloved. It's not necessarily commanded, but it's beloved speech. What does that mean, that's beloved? So the Rambam writes, v'hu ha-dibor b'shevach ha-mailos ha-sichlios, or mailos ha-midos, or b'gnos ha-pchisos. It's speech about how great thinking is. Talking about how wonderful it is to be intelligent. Or how much I enjoy study and curious seeking of knowledge. Or talking about how foolish it is and how lowly it is to be ignorant by one's own choice. L'hayir ha-nefesh l'maylos b'sipurim b'shirim u'lemanam min ha-pchisos b'drachim ahim ba'atzim. To speak stories and praises of people who are intellectually inclined and to degrade people who sit and play checkers all day. I don't know, that's what I see every day when I walk out through the shuk. People sitting there playing checkers, mamash, all day. And then he writes, here's the end of the Rambam, and Rambam writes, V'chein l'shabeach ha-chashuvim v'hodos ma'alasam kidei she'ativu min hageyam v'enei b'nei adam v'ayiluchu b'darchei. And also to praise, to study well, the ways and activities of those who actually, not just to praise wisdom itself, not just to praise morality itself, but to praise the people who actually live their lives that way. By doing that, a person ends up coming into contact with those who love important things, good things, worthwhile things, and will end up staying away from and shying away from and generally trying to distance oneself from things that are able to negatively impact the person's worldview. Oh, so we'll end with one Rambam. This is a highly unusual shir for me, you'll understand, because I didn't quote one Sefer Chassidus. I only quoted Rishonim. And I feel like a blah. So the I got close to quoted the Chazon Ish. So the Rambam writes, we actually quoted this last week, but actually for a little bit of a different reason. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos, really in two places he talks about this. But I'll just share with the outside and we'll end with this. That the Rambam says that people who are sick, a person is not well, so they begin to taste things which should taste good as being bitter, as being, like we mentioned last week for those who were here, so a person who is not well, a person who's sick, and you bring a person whose like stomach is hurting and they're in bed and they're all achy and they're clogged up, and you bring them like a steak with those like wedding vegetables that somehow they make like miniature vegetables. I don't know how they do that. You might have the little carrots. You know what I'm talking about? I don't even know how they do that. How do they do that? I don't know. It's like shrinky dink food. I don't know how they do that. bet Daniel knows how to do it. So you bring that to a person who's sick in bed. They say, "Oh, I don't want. Just give me some toast and like some like Earl Grey tea. You know, I don't even want the like fruity flavor tea. I just want, just give me like some toast, maybe a little butter and salt on it, and a little bit of tea." What happened? How come all of a sudden something which a person normally, I mean, if I offered any of you, assuming that everyone's healthy here and not a vegetarian, if I offered any of you, you know, some delicious meal of some sort, whatever, so that, why would you jump at it and this person not? Because the person who's sick, things that are that taste bitter end up tasting sweet, things that are sweet taste bitter. So the Rambam writes the same thing is true of physical illness, the same thing is true of spiritual illness. How could it be that the moment that I have a moment of free time, the second I have a moment of free time, the first thing I think of is, oh, let me find a sefer to read, or let me go find a quiet place where I could sit and just talk to Hashem in English. How could it be that you have one person, I'm not saying anything about myself, I'm just saying, like, how could it be that you have one person who has that inclination, and you have another person who is like, you know, there's no tachanun today, and all of a sudden there's like, you know, there's a parade, because there's like 2 minutes off of, you know, davening, and just got cut off. No tachanun, it's like, go buy that chasen a cake. You know, this guy just causes not to say tachanun, it's the biggest deal in the world. There's a free period, you know, the Rebbe's not here today. Everybody run. So how could you have two people have the same thing? So the Rambam says that a person who's not interested in perfecting the self, a person is sick. He tastes that which is sweet as bitter, and that which is bitter as sweet. The person sees self-destructive behaviors as being the height of pleasure, and sees refinement and gentleness and quiet contemplation as being like the worst punishment in the world. So the Rambam says, just like a person who's sick physically, doesn't like good foods, a person who's sick intellectually or emotionally or spiritually feels that they have to distance themselves from things which are, for all intents and purposes, we would agree, outside of our having to work hard for them, are worthwhile, are good. And here's the part where we come to a close. So the Rambam says, what does a person do if they're sick? If you're in bed, and somebody brings you a steak, and you say, I'm not interested, just get me the toast. So hopefully, after a little bit of time passes, the person will have the seichel, will have the wherewithal, to say, I better get to a doctor, because something's not right here. I know my whole life, I enjoyed, okay, if anybody here is a vegetarian, so I always enjoyed having a lovely health salad, and now I can't even look at it, it looks disgusting, and all I want is toast. I better go to a doctor to figure out what's wrong. So the Rambam says that who are the doctors of the souls? The doctors of the souls are those people who have somehow extricated themselves from the problems of being trapped in this world, being enslaved to physical desires, whether it's sleep or food or sexual desire, whether it's a person's laziness, or a person's anger, or a person's gaiva, or a person's... whatever it is, look to the people who have somehow pulled themselves up from that place and can show you the path, just like a doctor who is able, through his wisdom, through his years of study, is able to show you, you know, do this, don't do this, this is what's causing this particular symptom, let's experiment with this. And just like a doctor can't always get it on the first try, it's not like you go to some rabbi and he blesses you and all of a sudden you become... the person who's an expert in the ways of the soul, the ways of developing oneself, he says, you know what, let's try this. It didn't work this week. Okay, let's try this. You know, there are a few things that can kind of make this same symptom happen. This rash could be from X or it could be from Y. This spiritual malady could be from X or could be from Y. Let's try this. So the Rambam says that only a person who's not interested in fixing the root of his anger, or the root of his laziness, or the root of, will say, you know what, I better not go anywhere near the doctors. Because I once had a bad experience with a doctor, it wasn't so nice. So therefore, I better stay away from the doctors completely. So what we're trying to do here, if I haven't made it clear, I think perhaps I made a case for it, maybe not a very impassioned one, but certainly a cogent one, that what we're going to try to do here, starting again with our Soloveitchik next week, is we're going to try to understand some of the core ideas. What led these particular thinkers to live the lives that they led. And we'll spend a few weeks on our Soloveitchik, and probably it'll take us past Rosh Hashanah. We'll have to come back after Sukkot's break and finish up our Soloveitchik. After Soloveitchik, we'll maybe do a few weeks on Rav Kook. And going down, so maybe we'll introduce some new personalities to spice things up this year for myself. And I look forward to going on the adventure with you if you so choose to join me. And okay, I should go off. Thank you. Zero pressure. Just shut this off in a second.
Oh, no.
Zero pressure.